Welcome to Talk Back, today's latest edition of Talk Back, hosted by your truly Gloria Shea, coming to you from the city of Cleveland. It's about 6 o'clock p.m. I'm not sure what time it is in your Pacific locations. Grab a cup of coffee, have a seat, relax, and I'm going to just kind of take you a little bit behind the scenes as to what's actually going on in Cuba right now. It's been in the news how the current administration, President Biden, is cracking down with more sanctions on Cuba. There have been protests in Washington, as well as Miami, and several cities across the country for about 3 weeks now since protests in Cuba began. And I believe the protests in Cuba actually began around mid-July, around July 11th. But some of the headline news have been talking about the Cuban embassy there in Paris, even. It was targeted for a bomb threat. There were nearly 60 persecuted over Cuban demonstrations. There's a plea, a national plea, an international plea for freedom from the media narrative on Cuba, which now, as we all have heard in the news media, the government has cracked down. It's totally eliminated any citizens' access to the internet to actually just put stories out there of their own, from the citizens of their own out there to the world. They've been cut off from media contact and from the internet. And so there's a plea for freedom from the media narrative that's going on in Cuba now, strictly created by the government. So there's a lot going on. Cuba is in a state of peril, certainly in a magnified state of a crisis. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. July 11th was approximately around when the Cuban protests started right there in Cuba. 700 protesters have been arrested or are missing following the protests, which is quite alarming. Cuban officials are already largely sanctioned by the U.S., in case you didn't know. So it's a bit unclear just what the Biden's sanctions will have, if any impact at all. I mean, this is not the first rodeo. This is not a news flash. This has been going on in that country for over 6 decades. It started, and I'll get a bit into that, under the former regime, under Castro. So this is really nothing new. It just seems to get worse and worse, and there really seems to be no end of it in sight. So Biden last week, he met with Cuban American leaders. He ordered sanctions after meeting with the American leaders on the head of the armed forces in Cuba, also the Cuban Ministry of the Interior Special National Brigade. They're mostly known by the name of the Black Berets, and they really are the primary cause of the crackdown on the Cuban citizens. So Biden calls on Cuba to either, you know, let go of its people and let them have the freedom to the internet and to the media. And he calls Cuba a failed state. Well, really, that's not anything new. They've been a failed state for, like I said, practically 6 decades at least. So he slapped individual sanctions on the Treasury Department, the Cuban Interior Ministry, the Cuban Police Force, two of its leaders, by the way, and the sanctions were imposed under the Global Magnitsky Act. So the United States has the authority under the Global Magnitsky Act to implement these sanctions. It allows the U.S. to impose, what it does, it allows the U.S. to impose economic sanctions on individuals who are believed to be engaged in human rights abuses and corruption. So that's what's going on currently. New sanctions after 6 decades of peril, literally. I mean, this didn't just happen under the current regime. Remember Fidel Castro and his role and how he literally just took away all sorts of rights and privileges from his own people. And he lived very, very well for quite a number of years, but yet the people of Cuba never seem to rise out of poverty. So we're going to talk a bit about that today here on Talk Back. Thank you for tuning in today with me. My name's Gloria Shea, and we're going to talk about Cuba today. Be sure, check out Talk Back on YouTube now. We actually do a live video of the show every other Saturday. As a matter of fact, we've got a show coming up this Saturday, August the 7th, and we're going to have a special guest. We're going to talk about cigars and cigar bars and how popular they have become here in the United States, although there is still an embargo on Cuba, so we can't get cigars, Cuban cigars, here in the United States still after all these years because of the embargo on cigars. But we're going to talk this coming Saturday, August the 7th at 11 o'clock a.m. Be sure and tune in to Talk Back Live. And we're going to have some special guests. We're going to have the owner of Redwood Cigar Lounge located. They've got three locations right here in the city of Cleveland. And we're going to have on the owners there of that cigar lounge. And they're going to talk about the rising success of cigar bars and lounges all over the country. It's amazing to me how that industry is just taking off like a rocket. Be sure to tune in. That's Talk Back Live coming up this coming Saturday, August 7th at 11 o'clock a.m. with yours truly. Also, be sure go to our YouTube channel, like and subscribe. Also, check out our Talk Back Facebook page, Talk Back, a thought-provoking talk format. That's Talk Back, a thought-provoking talk format. Check it out, like our page, leave us a review, and stay tuned to Talk Back. Okay, so today we're going to talk about the human crisis, and we're going to talk just how amazing and how this has been a long-standing fight for the Cuban citizens for literally six decades or more. Let me just share with you today, if I may, just give you some Cuba facts, some history about the government and its existence long before the current regime under Diaz has come into play. He came actually, became the new head of state in 2018. But we're going to talk about a little bit of Cuba, give you some Cuba facts. Cuba's government is a Marxist-Leninist single-party state that has been headed by a member of the Castro family for many decades. Castro ruled for six decades. The country's total GDP is $68.7 billion. I'll repeat that. The country's GDP numbers is $68.7 billion, which gives it the 63rd largest economy in the world. Their total per capita GDP is $6,100, which is the 88th greatest in the world. That is astounding. Most of Cuba's labor force is controlled and employed by the state. Totally state run. The labor force is run by the state. Their main exports include fish, medical products, coffee, citrus fruits. Their main imports include oil, food, chemicals, and machinery. Cuba used to depend greatly on the Soviet Union to stabilize its economy. When the Soviet Union collapsed, Cuba went through a time term, the special period, in which their economy rapidly declined. To help recover, they legalized the use of the U.S. dollar in business and began allowing self-employment. Cuba has a 99.8% literacy rate, which is one of the highest in the world. Cuba is the largest country in the Caribbean in terms of population. They have a little over 11 million people in Cuba. There are only 90 miles of ocean between Cuba and the tip of Florida in the United States. Keep that in mind. There are only 90 miles of ocean between Cuba and the tip of Florida in the United States, which is why back in the 60s when Kennedy was president of the United States, and he had to stare down the Soviet president at that time because he had hidden missiles right off the island of Florida because it was so close, and the terror and the fear if Russia or the Soviet Union would try to attack, it could easily attack the United States right off the island of Cuba because there's only 90 miles of ocean between Cuba and the United States. So the history there and why Kennedy just could not even a thought or a ripple of a thought consider allowing the Soviet Union to keep missiles hidden off of the island of Cuba because it was just too close for comfort. So that's why we had to stand up to Brezhnev and why we had to stand to steer him down and say, no way we're going to allow this. Otherwise, we could have been in another world war. Just a little bit of history there for you. So Cuba, now the facts here that I've shared with you is a bit amazing to me. I mean, their GDP is $68.7 billion. It's the 63rd largest economy in the world. The world. And yet, the labor force is controlled and employed by the state. 99.8% literacy rate, which is one of the highest in the world. And yet, over six decades of demise, poverty, and really just being left in behind in every facet of infrastructure, of global inclusion. It's amazing to me. So those are things I wanted to share with you about Cuba that I found a bit astounding, and it makes you wonder, how can these things keep happening in Cuba? How can they keep happening in Cuba? Around 1994, hundreds of Cubans poured their rage and desperation onto the oceanfront boulevard known as Malecón. So, fast forward 27 years later, this country is even in larger protests with thousands across the islands taking to the streets over the same complaints that they had 27, 28, 30, 35, 40, 50 years ago. It's just amazing. A failing economy, nothing new there. Food shortages, nothing new there. The blackouts that have left scores of Cubans sweltering in the heat. And a spike with COVID-19 outbreak has really only made matters much, much worse there in Cuba. So where's the difference between Fidel Castro, who was a tyrant, he was feared, he was a master propagandist, is gone. Where's the difference now? Why is Cuba still experiencing this peril? Who has the answer for that? Maybe we can help with that. Maybe we can answer some parts of that question. Current President Miguel Díaz-Canel recently walked through the streets among protesters, and he was cursed at. Many say that Díaz-Canel does not have much of the revolutionary pedigree of Fidel Castro. Let's not forget, Castro was a guerrilla fighter, okay? So he was looked upon as a liberator for Cuba, which part is correct, but he kept his own people in bondage after taking power. So some say The situation now is much more complicated than the one back under Castro, and that Diaz just doesn't have the goods. There's just a very fundamental difference between him and Fidel. He's not really quite able to get a grip and a tight hold that Fidel Castro had on the people. They're saying that Diaz just doesn't have that type of stronghold mentally on the people that Castro did. You're listening to Talk Back, hosted by yours truly, Gloria Shea. Our sponsor today is Lincoln Heritage Insurance. If you have a loved one who has had to bury a loved one recently and maybe they didn't have enough funds, funerals today on average cost between $10,000 and $12,000, and they constantly go up every single year. So if you have, you've known someone, a friend or loved one who's had to bury someone recently, and the stress that they had from losing a loved one was there, but it was also coupled with financial difficulties, give us a call, Lincoln Heritage, 216-394-8926. That's 216-394-8926. And we will be happy to give you a call. We'll answer your questions. You're under no obligation. We'll come out and we will actually share with you a lot of the benefits that Lincoln Heritage offers. You've got a loved one, or you know someone who has had to bury a loved one, then you know the stress is enough of it all, of losing a loved one. But when you also have financial difficulties to add to that, it makes it a lot more stressful. Give Lincoln Heritage a call, 216-394-8926. That's 216-394-8926. And someone will give you a call, a representative will give you a call, and they'll be happy to come out and meet with you and your family and show you the benefits of having a policy under Lincoln Heritage. Okay, so Cuba today is in peril. Cuba is dealing with situations much more complicated than they did under Fidel Castro. And pretty much people are saying he's no Fidel. So he doesn't quite have the grip over people that Fidel Castro had for those six decades. And even that his brother had. But Diaz, a former education minister, he's a longtime bureaucrat, he's a communist loyalist, he's very loyal to the Communist Party, and he became head of state in 2018 after nearly six decades of Castro rule. He succeeded Raul Castro, the first secretary of the Communist Party, after, of course, Fidel had died. And then his brother, Raul Castro, succeeded him, but now they have a new head of state, and he became that in 2018, Diaz. Diaz coincided with a number of developments in Cuba. The gross domestic product shrank by 11% in 2020. And it's been reported that it may take years for the country to fully recover. The nation is facing an estimated 500% inflation rate. The economic collapse of the once oil-rich patron, Venezuela. We all have heard about the demise of Venezuela and what they've gone through in the last few years, coupled with the U.S. sanctions tightened by the Trump administration thus far and now maintained by the Biden administration, has left the island struggling. So, economically, the treasury is empty. So we're looking at economic collapse in Cuba. Protesters and Cuba analysts are scratching their heads. They're wondering whether this could be a tipping point toward long-awaited economic reforms in the country, or whether protests will simply lead to further repression. And quite frankly, we're witnessing that now, because they've taken away the citizens' right to even have access to the internet. So what does that mean? They have no communication with the outside world. they're not able to report what's going on in Cuba to the outside world. And that's generally what happens under a communistic rule. That's the first thing they do is shut down the media. That's the first thing they do, because they don't want the people to have access to the outside world so that they can share what's being on to the people there. So it's a terrible thing that's going on there. It really is. Will it get better? Will it get worse? Who knows? The sanctions under the current administration, I'm not really sure. Are you? This is going to help? They're already economically in decline. They're already perishing economically there in Cuba now. So adding economic sanctions, do they really help the Cuban people or hurt the Cuban people? When Díaz-Canel replaced Raúl Castro, Fidel's brother, as head of the state about 3 years ago, some Cubans were cautiously optimistic at that time that this younger generation of leaders born after the country's revolution would usher in change. But in his inaugural speech, Díaz vowed to bring continuity to the Cuban revolution and said there was no room for those who aspired to a capitalist restoration. Okay. So what does that tell you right there? He's down with more of the same. And this is why the people of Cuba are protesting and they're marching in the streets all over again. Remember back under Barack Obama's administration, how he had opened up the channels for Cuba on the international stage, how he had started that process. And he was looking to bring them in on the economic stage and have them do more importing, more exporting to other countries around the world to help their economic structure. Remember that? How he was so for that, opening up the channels, and then Trump came in and just basically shut the door and put a lock on it. So Biden, who hasn't even been in for 6 months now, or maybe, let's say 6 months, but with everything that's gone on with COVID, he hasn't had a lot of time to focus on Cuba and reopening those channels. So in the meantime, their own head of state, Díaz-Canel, is saying, forget about it. Forget about it. There's no room for anyone in this country to aspire to a capitalist restoration. So he pretty much, with the lock still on the door that Trump put there, he's saying, I'm all for the lock on the door. There's no need for us to seek capitalistic ideas for Cuba. We're doing okay. Well, they're not doing okay. They're doing pretty bad there. And one of his first decrees as president, Díaz-Canel banned artists and musicians from operating in public or private spaces without prior approval of the Ministry of Culture. One of his first decrees as president, Díaz banned artists, musicians from operating in public or private. It's just, and the people are sick and tired of it. They're sick of it. So he's urged Cuba's revolutionary citizens to take to the street. Security forces have detained at least 400 people, and many have been, they've even targeted journalists, activists, by standing watch outside their homes. They're using the same playbook as Castro. The name of the game for the Cuban government has always been to shut the people out. We will repress with the least visibility possible. But when you have hundreds of thousands of people in the streets, that's challenging. So that's the challenge for the current head of state, Diaz. He doesn't quite have the grip on the people, legally or unlegally, didn't matter to Castro, but Diaz doesn't quite have that mental stronghold on the people of Cuba as Castro did. So here we are. The United States have imposed more sanctions, yada, yada, yada. Same old thing. Have things changed? Even in the last, since they started in July, a few short weeks ago? No. Have we seen any progress? No. Has the Cuban officials or even the head of state there, Diaz, has he even wanted to come to the table and talk about it with this current administration? No. So that's where we are with Cuba. It's crazy. And with COVID, and now the variant, the increasing of that, it only makes things worse. The electrical system is in need of repair. Medicine, supply to medicines are being challenged right now with COVID. So the people there are in peril. But there are a few positive signs. Some analysts and protesters say that they are seeing some positive signs. For example, increased customs flexibility will have little impact on the average Cuban family. The majority of families don't have anyone who can bring them medicine or food from outside of the country. That's a peril. So where are the analysts and some are seeing positive signs? I don't know. The Cuban family is suffering right now. Yohani Sanchez, a blogger and journalist, sent a stronger message in response, tweeting, "Blood was not spilled on Cuba streets to import a few extra suitcases." Carlos Azurague, a former Cuban diplomat, said the government should have recognized its mistakes earlier. Mr. Diaz Canel has confronted the tornado hurricanes. Trump, so he's stressed out. I have no doubt about it. There is a group of ideologues surrounding Diaz who scare the hell out of him, which he said is part of the reason economic reform has been so slow. Is there a way out of the crisis in Cuba? Within the past year, the Cuban government took two significant steps. It announced the largest devaluation of the peso since the 1959 revolution. And it said it would allow private businesses to operate in most sectors. Vidal, the economist, said he hopes the protests help loosen the state's grip over the economy. He also emphasized the need for Cuba to join the international financial institutions to integrate into the global market. Here is what the Obama administration tried so desperately to do while he was in office. And then, of course, Trump came in and just threw a wrecking ball into the situation. This would require negotiation with President Biden, who has so far not shown any desire to refresh relations with the country. He hasn't had enough time. With COVID and dealing with things here in the United States, he hasn't had enough time to pick up and open that door again for Cuba. He just hasn't had enough time. So hopefully, you know, this time will allow him to focus on Cuba and the economy and how to get them on the world stage, the world economic stage, and open up the channels and the doors for Cuba. There are a number of things that we would consider doing to help the people of Cuba, Biden has already said Thursday, he said in a news conference, but it would require different circumstance or a guarantee that they would not be taken advantage of by the government. Remember, the state controls the labor in Cuba. So will a change come? I certainly hope so for Cuba. I certainly hope so. Cuba historian and New York University professor Ada Ferrer said, Diaz can't ask for more sacrifice. He can't say this is just a blip. It'll end. He's unable, I think, to convince the public that there's effects. And he's unable to use migration as an escape value for opposition, just as Castro did in the 1980 and even in 1994 with the exodus to the United States. People don't want to leave Cuba. They love their home. They want to stay. Protesters are not protesting in the streets to leave their country. They don't want to leave Cuba. They've seen generations of Cubans leave the island. Yet life for those left behind hasn't gotten any better. We can't keep going like this, Ruiz said. As a country, we need to advance. We need to resolve our issues. We need to get somewhere different. And I totally agree with him. There has to be the door and the channels have to be open for Cuba to buy and sell goods on the world market. In the world market. It has to happen for Cuba to become an independent and a viable country for its own people. Our sponsor is Lincoln Heritage Insurance Company. If you have questions about insurance, if you don't have any coverage at all, and maybe you lost your job, or maybe you're in the middle of looking for a new job, give us a call, 216-394-8926. 216-394-8926. Lincoln Heritage will come out. A representative will give you a courtesy call. You're under no obligation. They'll go over a lot of the benefits that Lincoln Heritage offers. The Guardian, the Funeral Guardian Society is one of those, just one of those benefits that will actually take you step by step and walk you through how to write down your final wishes of your loved one and make sure that they're carried out. Nothing more comforting than to know when you lose a loved one that you've been able to carry out their final wishes. So give Lincoln Heritage a call, 216-394-8926. That's 216-394-8926. And we'll have a representative give you a call and answer all your questions. Well, you've been listening to Talk Back. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Talk Back with Gloria. I certainly hope you enjoyed today's show. We've been talking about the Cuban crisis, and I thank you for listening. Until next time, America.
You have been listening to Talk Back with my grandma on Spotify. Be sure and catch her every weekend. Oh, and by the way, my name is Kari. Bye.